Greetings, everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabel, Missouri. Now, the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally and internationally 7 days a week here in the United States and more than 112 countries around the world over the Internet. For more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. Now, the Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, science, education, politics, religion, health, history, economics, news, and current events. So stay tuned for tonight's special report on fairy tales when we come back. Well, welcome to Tax Freedom Day, May 12th. That means you worked all of January, February, March, and April, and a third of May to pay your income tax for the year, and that's not all. Now you get to work for the rest of May and all of June to pay your other withholding taxes, and this income tax and Social Security tax are two criminal enterprises. The income tax is the second plank to the Communist Manifesto, and Social Security is the eighth plank to the Communist Manifesto. And this income tax and Social Security tax also violate three of the Ten Commandments and eight statutes of the Scriptures and our English common law to boot. Now, about 14 million Americans are no longer enrolled in Social Security, and more are opting out every day. That's why I contend that you owe it to yourself to at least ask the question, do I really want to participate in this kind of criminal activity? Why don't you call or write today for our free general law CD package? To order that free CD package, just call direct 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967, or you can go to our website at georgegordon.org. georgegordon.org. Just click onto the email machine and send us an email request for the free general law CD package. Again, that's georgegordon.org, or call us direct at 417-273-4967. All right, we've been talking about fairy tales. I told you about the little girl that took me down into the woods to show me her fairy house. And I thought, well, for an eight-year-old girl, that's kind of keen. She's got a little fairy house down here. I suppose all of us, when we were little children, we used to have dreams and fairy tales. Children, until they get to be about 10 years old, are unable to separate fantasy from reality. And children are kind of fun, and they're kind of funny in their beliefs. They believe in all kinds of crazy things that don't have any semblance or any connection with reality. So where do they get these ideas? Where does a little child get the idea that there are fairies out here, or that there's a Santa Claus or an Easter Bunny? Well, you guessed it. We taught them that. We're the ones. We're the adults. And we adults believe in fairy tales. It's a denial of reality. What happens to us, our psychologists and psychiatrists tell us, is that when we become stressed out and we're unable to cope with reality, then we go into a fantasy. It's called denial. We believe in denial. We say the Titanic is unsinkable. We do not want to comprehend. We do not want to admit into our minds that a ship of this size could, in fact, sink. And besides that, I'm riding on it. And boys and girls, when you're riding on this boat, you don't want it to sink. You don't want this airplane to crash. And so, you know, I'm an old-timey pilot, and the last thing we want to do is crash. And so as we're flying along, you know, we say to ourselves, you know, in our quiet inner thoughts, now the chances of this airplane crashing are only one in a million, because, you know, millions of flights occur, and this is just one more of those million. It is true, you know, once in a while an airplane crashes, and it is true when it crashes that all the people get killed, but, you know, sometimes they're survivors. We kind of like to kid ourselves a little bit, you know, as we're involved in our daily activities. Yeah, we know that 40,000 people get killed in car wrecks, but it isn't going to happen to me. That's what denial is all about. Your chances of getting killed in a car wreck are just as good as anybody else's. And the guy that got killed in a car wreck yesterday, he didn't think he's going to get killed either. But, you know, time and chance. Time and chance happens to us all. The Apostle Peter made an observation one time. He said, I will never deny you. And he was probably real sincere. He probably, when he uttered that statement, Lord, I will never deny you. I mean, he's probably about like Senator Mitchell when he was running for president. He had a guy named for vice president. His name was Thomas Eagleton. And Eagleton had this skeleton in his closet. He'd had some psychiatric evaluations or had been in a mental hospital or something. And he said, I'm behind Eagleton 1,000%. And I'm sure he meant that when he said it. But the political reality of it was is that Eagleton was a liability and that people had a bad connection, you know, between Eagleton and mental illness and being vice president. And so he dropped him. And the reason I bring that up is because, you know, human beings believe in fairy tales. Human beings believe in fairy tales because they don't want to face reality. They're in denial. The other day I reported to you a series of programs, and I said, this woman said, you know, we're all entitled to health care insurance. America is the richest nation in the world. And it's true. America used to be the richest nation in the world. America used to have great wealth. We squandered it all like the prodigal son. We took our inheritance, and we spent it on wild women and song. We had a hell of a party. I don't deny that. Well, we had a great time. But the money's gone. The wealth is gone. We've mortgaged everything into the future. America is not the richest nation in the world. We're one of the pauper nations. In fact, we're probably poorer than most nations in the world. Any country that's at zero COD is wealthier than we are. In spite of all the SUVs you're driving and the nice house you're living in, which is a short-term event that's coming to an end shortly in a city near you. But we believe in these fairy tales because of denial. It's an adult addiction. It's not something that comes from children. We teach our children fairy tales. Whether we should or not is another story or another question for another day. I don't teach my children fairy tales, and I didn't let my children watch Sesame Street or Barney either. And that's because dinosaurs aren't purple, and if they were, we don't know that. And furthermore, that Barney may be a real nice, cute little cartoon character over there, but it's not where reality is located. The Amish people have a little different take on that. They don't watch television. Amish children are not raised with fairy tales. Amish children are raised with cows and ducks and chickens and real livestock and work. And there's useful, productive, meaningful work out there. Now, if you want to believe in fairy tales and practice a fairy tale existence, you know, that's your choice in life. I'm not here to tell you not to. I'm a reporter. I don't tell people what to do. I just give you facts, and you can decide for yourself what you want to do. But the facts are that we Americans, Canadians, Australians, and Europeans are living in a fairy tale land. This isn't where the real world is located, kids. Now, it's been a great party since the end of World War II. We've been living, you know, very well. And we might complain about the high price of gas, but, you know, we've got automobiles to burn the gas, and the average Joe Sixpack doesn't have an automobile. He's not concerned about the price of gas. He's spending 80% of everything he makes of his $2 or $4 a day on food. He's not concerned about automobiles or a trip to Disneyland or whether or not he can meet his credit card payments. Hell, he hasn't got a credit card. He hasn't got any credit. He doesn't have any money. He's living in a hovel. He doesn't even have enough to eat, for crying out loud. He's not living in a fairyland. He's living in reality. We're the people that are living in a fairyland. And it's about to come down and bite us in the ass. Now, when Peter said, "I will never deny you," he was probably sincere. He probably meant that. And Jesus turned to him and he said, "Pete, before the cock crows three times, you're going to deny me three times." Three times. And sure enough, as you know, the evening wore on, I came up to him and they said, "Hey, he's one of these guys." No, not me. I don't have anything to do with that. Don't tie me in with those radicals now. They came up and said, "No, we saw you with this guy over here. We're pretty sure you're one of them." "Oh, no, those are religious kooks over there. I'm mainstream, you know. I'm not one of those religious nuts." So I just thought I'd throw that one out there for you. You know, come on. There's reality, and then there's denial. Peter ended up with a denial. The Titanic is unsinkable. That was another denial. Hell, the people on the Titanic, it was reported that night, I came up on deck, some of them went back down, went to their rooms again. What happened? We hit an iceberg. Listen, everybody knows that ships that hit icebergs sink. It's been going on, you know, for thousands of years, for crying out loud. Ships that run into icebergs poke holes in them. When you poke holes in them, they sink. So here's the Titanic, biggest ship ever built, luxury liner. All the rich and prosperous people in the world are riding on it, and the ship runs into an iceberg. It come back up and said, "Well, it looks all pretty good to me." They were in a state of denial. They were living in a fairyland. They believed the story that the ship was unsinkable. It's got watertight doors. It's got compartments. That's all true. It's got watertight compartments. Okay, but watertight compartments can be breached, as we discovered. And the ship sank. And I hear people say, "We'll never have food shortages here in America." I imagine you Canadians must be saying, "We'll never have food shortages in Canada. This is Canada. That happens in Bangladesh. That happens over in Burma. That doesn't happen in Canada, Australia, England." Now, you Europeans over there know what rationing is from World War II. You know what war is. You went through it. We Americans over here, we're living in a fairyland. We never had war here. You Australians and Canadians, we didn't have war in Canada and Australia. We had a little token rationing over here, but nothing serious. Famine won't come here to America. Yeah, I got news for you. We got famine coming here to America. We got a bad famine. It's a worldwide famine. And it's a fairy tale that we've been told, that you've got all this abundance and all this wealth and you've got all these rights. Those are fairy tales. Just like the little girl going down in the woods to her fairy house. Sweet little girl, cute as a bug's ear. But when adults engage in those kinds of fairy tales, it can get downright serious. And when whole nations engage in these fairy tales, it can get to be deadly. And America, Canada, Australia, and Western Europe, you're all engaged in a great big fairy tale. Like what's going on out there in the world doesn't affect us. Boys and girls, what's going on out there in the world affects all of us. And it's going to come back and bite us in the butt. So I thought I would report that to you. And the last time we talked about the war on drugs, the Taliban, we talked about the family farmer. We talked about jobs, jobs, jobs. Well, listen to this. Have you heard about the strong dollar policy? The strong dollar policy. Now, I've heard this for the last 50 years. I mean, as long as I've been along, been alive, the government, that is the politicians, I don't care whether it's Dwight Eisenhower, he was in favor of a strong dollar policy. And Richard Nixon, the strong dollar policy. I've never heard of a president running for office or a candidate that said, I'm the weak dollar candidate. Vote for me and we'll have weak dollars. We'll have inflation. Vote for me. I'm the inflation candidate. Hell, you're not going to vote for the inflation candidate and you're not going to vote for a weak dollar. But the dollar's been getting weaker and weaker and weaker. Do you know how much your dollars are worth today? Well, I guess we'd have to say, well, compared to what? Well, compared to 1930. From 1787 to 1930, your dollar hadn't lost a dime. It still had all of its purchasing power. Well, I shouldn't say that. 1787 to 1913, from 1913 to 33, it had lost some purchasing power. Nothing serious, you know, compared to today, but it had lost some purchasing power in that 20 years. And because of that, the nation went into bankruptcy. That's what the Great Depression was predicated upon, and the revaluation of gold from $20.67 an ounce to $32 and then $35 an ounce was in fact a bankruptcy petition. When governments go bankrupt, they don't go down to the bankruptcy court and file for bankruptcy and stick it to their creditors. What they do is they just pay them less gold than was bargained for. So an ounce of gold is $20.67, so we just move it up to $35 and we say, well, from now on, an ounce of gold is worth $35 instead of $20. So, you know, we contracted for $100, we were going to pay you 5 ounces of gold. Now we're not going to pay you 5 ounces of gold, we're going to give you a little bit less than 3 ounces of gold. Contracted for 5, we're going to pay you 3. Okay, that's what a bankruptcy is. Now, that is at the national level. Now, Americans went off into this New Deal, Fair Deal thing back in the 1930s, 40s, and 50s, and we got off onto deficit spending. You know, we had the Depression, and we had some problems, and we had to solve those problems, and God love Franklin D. Roosevelt and Harry Truman, so we got right after it. So we developed a little national debt, and of course, World War II didn't help us any. That got a little bit more debt. So that by 1950 or so, we had about $257 billion worth of debt. In 1930, it was $2 billion. By 1950, it was $257 billion. We had increased it by a fair amount. Now, it was no big deal because the United States of America was worth more than $255 billion in 1950 dollars. And so, okay, so we have a little debt, and we'll just pay that off. And then over the years, as time has gone on, we've added more to the debt. Today, as I speak here in the United States, it's $9 trillion. And that's $9,000 billion. That's from $255 billion to $9,000 billion. And it's growing rapidly by about $1 trillion a year. Now they're telling us it's about $300 or $400 billion, but they lie to us a lot. That's another part of the fairy tale we're coming to. How much is the deficit? Hell, we believe the deficit is what the government tells us. But there's an outfit called ShadowStats.com. You have to turn to it sometime, ShadowStats.com. And they're one of the groups that's following economics in real terms, you know, in the numbers that are actually coming out of the agencies as opposed to what's being reported through hedonics, which is another fairy tale created by Bill Clinton. They said, well, we don't want you pensioners, you know, you people on Social Security, to know what real inflation is running. And so we're going to come up with a new formula called hedonics. And we just don't count energy and we don't count food in the cost of living index. Well, I don't know where in the hell these politicians live, but here where I live in the Ozarks, the price of gasoline has doubled and the price of food went up 69% last year. Remember, I reported that to you. Seems like to me I got to eat, and most of us Americans, not all of us, but most of us, unless you're an Amish man or a Mennonite and you're tucked away someplace, are buying gasoline, aren't you? What the hell do you mean gasoline and food should be excluded from the consumer price index? What in the hell are these people smoking? Gasoline. Gasoline, children. Everybody in America is using gasoline. 90% of us use gasoline, for crying out loud. Probably more than 90% of us use gasoline. So when the price of gasoline goes up, I got to pay more money. I went in to have my car filled up the other day, and I filled it up. It was 70 bucks and some change. And I went in, and the nice young fellow there, the clerk, you know, and I pulled out a $100 bill, and I passed it off to him, and I said, son, let me tell you something. See, I'm an old man, and I got white hair, see? So when there's some pimply-faced punk behind the counter, you know, and I say, son, let me tell you something. They look at you like, huh? Who is this old fart anyway? And so I said, son, I bought my first car in 1955, and it cost $50 for a 1932 Chevrolet four-door sedan. I said, I just put more gasoline in my car than I paid for my first car. And he looked at me, and he kind of, huh? Can that really be? You mean you could buy a car for $50? Hell, you could buy a brand new Ford 1927 for $235. Yeah, a brand new Model T Ford right off the assembly line for $235. Hell, you truck drivers put that in one fuel tank. All right, now those are adjusted, you know, for inflation, huh? Inflation? The hell is that? See, most of you people have been watching Barney and Mr. Rogers, they don't talk about inflation, do they, on Sesame Street? No, because they don't talk about reality. Sesame Street doesn't have anything to do with reality, and the prices of cars in 1932 are 27, and the price of ice cream today, that doesn't enter into the equation. Katie Couric doesn't talk about that. She's a touchy-feely, feel-good, smiley person, you know. And we're talking about filling up your car with gas, and it costs $3.50 a gallon. You guys over in Europe now, you must be laughing. Price of gas, last time I heard, top $10 a gallon in Britain. $10 a gallon for unleaded in Britain. $10.40 for diesel fuel. We Americans are crying our eyeballs out over here. Gasoline's $3.50 a gallon. Diesel's $4 a gallon. Truck drivers over here going broke. I don't know what the hell you truck drivers in Europe do, paying $10 a gallon for it. Somehow or another, those people over in Europe are able to pay $10 and drive the freight from here to there and make money at it. Last time I heard, the Germans still have a trade surplus. Now, we're so far divorced from reality over here watching Mr. Rogers, we haven't got our heads on straight. That's what the bottom line is. But getting back to the strong dollar over here, listen to this. In 1930, you could take a $20 bill, piece of paper, $20 bill, or a $20 gold piece, either or, and you could go down to the haberdasher, and you could buy a new suit, you know, a Hickey Freeman suit. You could buy wingtip shoes, suspenders, or a belt, a necktie and a shirt. And that $20 bill would buy the whole thing. Easy, and you get change back. Or you could have gave the guy a $20 gold piece, whichever your choice is. They're both passed as the same value. Now today, take that same $20 bill and go into, Mark's Men's Shop. And let's see what you're going to get for that $20 bill. Maybe you can get a silk necktie for $20, maybe. I'm not sure if you can get a shirt for $20. But you can take that $20 gold piece and take it over to Charlie Hayes, cash it in. He'll give you 850 or 900 Federal Reserve notes. Now take those 800 or 900 Fed notes and go over to Mark's Men's Shop. And I think you can buy a new suit, a pair of wingtip shoes, then suspenders or a belt, and then you can get the tailoring done, and you can get the shirt and the whole nine yards for that $850 and have some change left over. Now that's where reality is located. Reality is in hard money. Reality is in gold and silver coin. Reality is in Leviticus 19, 35, and 36. You shall not have an unjust weight or balance in your bag. You know, that's where reality's at. Now the fairyland came in when Roosevelt came in, took our gold away, and said, what we need here is a strong dollar. How in the hell do you get a strong dollar by abolishing gold, and then later President Johnson took our silver coin away from us? How do you establish a strong dollar with paper? Huh? Have you people been able to connect the dots for very long? I mean, I learned how to do that when I was about 8 years old. You know, connect the dots. You know, draw a line from this dot to that dot. I mean, if you could count to 100 when you were 8 years old, you know, you're saying 9 goes to 10, 10 goes to 11, 11 goes to 12. Hell, we adults haven't been able to do that with our monetary system since 1930. All right, now we've had this inflation thing going on, and all of the politicians have been telling us, Republicans and Democrats, conservatives and liberals, I don't care who they are, I'm for a strong dollar. I'm a strong dollar candidate. Because here where I'm at, I've never met the weak dollar candidate. I've never met the inflation candidate. Never heard of them. Well, I don't know what the hell they look like. But I did notice this, that as of today, if you compare prices with 1930 with what they are in 2008, the dollar has depreciated by 98 cents, 98%. Boys and girls, when the dollar depreciates by 98%, for all practical purposes, the dollar has been, past tense, destroyed. It's gone. Dead. Dead on arrival. D-E-D. Dead on arrival. That's where your strong dollar policy from the Roosevelt administration to the Bush administration and every president and every Congress and every Supreme Court, those 545 people in Washington, D.C., that's what they have delivered to us between 1930 and 2008. And every single one of them said, I'm the strong dollar candidate. Well, don't you think that with the last 2 cents up for grabs today, yeah, that's all you're arguing over now. When we talk about the collapse of the economy, when we talk about the dollar crisis, when we talk about the balance of payments deficit, when we talk about the housing crisis and the SIV and the ABS and all of this alphabet soup of crises and the monetary crisis and the balance of payments deficit and so on, hell, all you're talking about is the last 2 cents. Boys and girls, when you're 98% maxed out on your credit card, for all practical purposes, you're maxed out. Oh, no, I still got 2% left. Excuse me, you got a $10,000 credit card, you're 98% maxed out. Oh, no, I've still got a strong credit position. Oh, my God. You know, when I hear that kind of crap, I got to sit here and cringe. Where in the hell has our head been? What are we smoking? What have we been listening to? It's like riding on the Titanic. We're riding on the unsinkable ship. Hell, those people believed that after it hit the iceberg, it was unsinkable. Of course, when they were ankle deep in water, they came to the conclusion that, well, maybe we do have a problem here. Boys and girls, the American economy, it's worse than ankle deep in water. Hell, we're up to our eyeballs in water. We're up to our eyeballs in debt. This thing is a done deal. It's all over. We haven't faced reality yet. We know we're still dealing with our fairies down in the woods. Our economic fairy is still down in the woods, going to bail us out, see. That's a fairy tale, kids. It's an adult fairy tale. That's a fairy tale for big people, grown-ups, that still believe in Barney, Big Bird, and Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood. Yeah, I got to give you a reminder here that you're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, and we're heard around the world in more than 100 countries daily over the Internet and radio. For more information about the law school and The Law Hour, please go to our website at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. Now, The Law School teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. That's 8 schools in all. The Law School is a private, nonprofit, non-sectarian law school, and it is open to individuals, but by prearrangement. Now, the law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc, and the Law Hour website is updated weekly. It has a radio log schedule and archives that can be accessed through the website as well. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience, and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Now, the law school offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. Be sure to order yours by calling the law school. Just ask for it. The number to call is 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. 4967. Now, the sources of information that we use on this program are true, accurate, and correct to the best of our knowledge and belief in the Law Hour, and editorial review gives credit to those authors and publications that we use on this program. And we often endorse and recommend books, papers, periodicals, and newsletters to our listeners. Now, these endorsements or recommendations that we give don't mean that those authors or publications that we endorse are necessarily going to reciprocate. Keep in mind that most of these authors and publications that we cite here on the Law Hour and editorial review, they may be hostile, political, religious, economic, sectarian, racial, or other ethnic partisans whose viewpoint may not be totally endorsed by the Law Hour and editorial review. These opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine. They're mine alone. They do not necessarily represent the views, beliefs, or the opinions of the advertiser, sponsors, management, or staff of this network or local radio station. Now, if you'd like more information about the Law Hour and editorial review, please go to our website. Remember, that's georgegordon.org. That's georgegordon.org. Or that number again, 417-273-4967. All right, we're talking about fairy tales. All right, well, the strong dollar was a fairy tale from day one. The truth of the matter is the United States government, from Franklin Roosevelt until last night at 5 o'clock, has been pursuing a weak dollar inflation policy with premeditated forethought. There is an outcome coming from it. It is the destruction of the United States of America, the destruction of our economy, the destruction of all of you people that live therein, and national captivity, and a new world order with a one world government. And Franklin D. Roosevelt, with his cigarette holder and his big broad smile, introduced it in 1933. And he started with House Joint Resolution 192. He was a commie pinko from day one. And every president that you've had, from Franklin Roosevelt to George Bush Jr., are practicing communists. Now, they may not carry a Communist Party membership, but they all practice the 10 planks to the Communist Manifesto, and they all advocate it. And the 535 members of Congress, with one exception, we used to have two exceptions. We had Ron Paul and Helen Chenoweth, but now Helen died, so you've only got Ron Paul left, the only non-communist left in the Congress. I said there's 545, you really got 544, and you got 9 members of the Supreme Court. Now, Ron Paul is one of those members. So out of 545 people that set policy, not just in the United States, but worldwide, because the rest of you people, when we catch cold, you get pneumonia. Don't forget that. When America goes down, you Australians, just take a look at your map. Take a look to the north, and what do you see up there? 1.3 billion Chinese, and that's spelled with a B, with their great big covetous eyes, on 3 million square miles of real estate occupied by about 20 million Aussies. And you Canadians up there, you know, pay attention now, 20 million of you or 30 million of you living up there in Canada. You're sitting on 3.5 million square miles of real estate that's covetously coveted by those same Chinese and Japanese and other people around the world that would like to take it. And they're going to. And that's the other half of the coin, the other side of the coin. All right, now there's another story over here called Peace, Peace. Have you been listening to these politicians? They're talking about peace in the Middle East, and they're talking about peace with the Palestinians, and they're talking about peace in Iraq, and peace in Afghanistan, and they want peace with the Chinese, they want peace with the Russians, they want peace, peace, and then the religious people over here talk about Jesus, and sweet Jesus, and peace, peace, and peace on earth, and goodwill toward men, and we just want peace. Oh, for crying out loud. Have we lost touch with reality again? Here's the United States of America. With the biggest military budget on earth. We spend more money on war and war material in the United States of America than everybody else in the world combined. And we want peace, peace. Huh? You got 732 military bases in 127 countries around the world. And we want peace. We just want peace. And then the religious guys, they come along and they're telling us, oh, we believe in Jesus and we just want peace on earth and goodwill toward men. Every time I listen to one of these pulpit parrots, they make me want to puke. Christian pulpit parrots, I call them. So I thought I'd share with you over here in Matthew 10. If you got a Bible, we'll turn over to it. What did Jesus say about peace? Did you think that Jesus came to bring peace to you Palestinians? Did you think that Jesus came to bring you peace, all you Jews over there in Tel Aviv? God, that's what we believe over here in America. 95% of Americans identify themselves as Christians. Now, you know, they may be spasmodic sentimentalists, and they don't go to church or anything like that, you know. But, hell, even the evolutionists over here, you know, if you said, well, what religion? Oh, I'm Catholic. Well, I'm a Lutheran. I'm a this or that or something else. And so here in America, and I imagine you Canadians and Australians, now most of you would identify yourselves as Christians. And here's what Jesus had to say about peace. It was in Matthew 10, verse 34. He said, think not. Don't think. Put it out of your mind. Get it out of your head, dummy. That's what think not means. It says, think not that I've come to send peace on earth. I came not to send peace, but a sword. If you have a red letter Bible, that's in red letters. That's a first person quotation from Jesus himself, right out of the boss's mouth. He said, don't you get it in your head that I come here to bring peace? I came here to bring war. But the fairy tale that you learned in church and Sunday school was, oh, Jesus is the King of Peace. Okay. No, don't let me get in the way of your happiness and success. What do you have in the world today, peace or war? What have you had in the world over the past 100 years? Peace or war? I mean, you might have some aspiration. You might have some desire. You know, you might be sitting there saying, God, I wish we had more peace in the world and less war. Well, that's fine. But that isn't what you got, and that's not where reality is, Mr. Rogers. Hey, Big Bird, that's not where it's at. You got a 300-foot hole down the side of the ship. There's water in the mail room. All the watertight doors are closed. And you're riding on the unsinkable ship. All right, now let's pay attention to reality over here. Jeremiah had a little something to say about this thing, too. And it's in Jeremiah 6, I believe it is. He's one of the major prophets, Jeremiah is. And he talked about a time when people would be talking about peace, peace, when there is no peace. Let me read you the story. He said, thus saith the Eternal of Hosts, they shall thoroughly glean the remnant of Israel as a vine, turn back your hand as a grape gatherer into the baskets. To whom shall I speak and give warning? That they may hear. Behold, their ear is uncircumcised. They cannot hearken. Behold, the word of the Eternal is unto them as a reproach, and they have no delight in it. You know, we Americans hate God. We hate the Bible. We have no delight in the Scriptures, even though 65% of us go to church every week. We hate the Bible. We don't read it. We don't listen to it, and we don't follow it. In verse 11, he says, therefore, I am full of the fury of the Eternal. I am weary with holding it in. I just can't hold it in. I will pour it out upon the children abroad and upon the assembly of the young men together. For even the husband with the wife shall be taken, the aged with him that is full of days. And their houses shall be turned unto others, with their fields and wives together. For I will stretch out my hand upon the inhabitants of the land, says the Eternal. For from the least of them, even unto the greatest of them, everyone is given to covetousness, and from the prophet, even unto the priest, everyone deals falsely. They have healed also the hurt of the daughter of my people slightly, by saying, peace, peace, when there is no peace. Were they ashamed when they had committed abomination? No, they were not at all ashamed, neither could they blush. Therefore they shall fall among them that fall, and at that time, the time that I visit them, they shall be cast down, says the Eternal. Thus saith the Eternal, stand you in the ways and see and ask for the old paths. Where is the good way? and then walk therein, and you shall find rest for your souls. But they said, We will not walk therein. Also I set watchmen over you, saying, Hearken to the sound of the trumpet. But they said, We will not hearken. Now, you know, here in America, we Americans will not listen. We're not going to listen to this God. This is poppycock. This is nonsense. Besides that, this is Old Testament. You Christians can't listen to this. Remember, this Old Testament now is nailed to the cross, taken out of the way with Jesus, remember? So the Americans aren't very likely to listen to the words of Jeremiah. But you know, he said, they will say in that day, peace, peace, when there is no peace. Now listen, Condoleezza Rice, he's over in the Middle East, talking about peace and peace and a two-state solution for the Palestinian problem. Hey, if you Palestinians over there are waiting for peace coming from the United States, hell's going to freeze over first. You can forget peace. That ain't going to happen. It hasn't happened in the past. It isn't happening today. And it isn't very likely to happen in the future. And the president says, well, I'm on my last days in office. This is my last year, and I'm on a peace offensive, and I think we're going to bring peace to the Middle East. Hell, we're fighting two wars over there now. Two! Not one. Got two wars going on simultaneously. You're spending money like it's going out of style. You people are bankrupt. Then the Americans are saying, I reported this to you, I think it was last week or the week before, this woman comes out, I'm sure this woman's been to college, she said, it's every American's right to have health care insurance. This is the richest nation in the world. God, that woman's on something good, ain't she? The richest nation in the world? You got the biggest debt in the world. You got the biggest army in the world. You got your military bases in more countries than anybody else in the world, probably everybody in the world combined. I'll bet you if you took a look at the military bases of the Chinese that they have outside of China, the military bases that the Russians have outside of Russia, the military bases that the Brazilians have outside of Brazil, and you take the military bases that every country in the world has outside of their own borders and somebody else's real estate and added them all up together, you won't come up with 732. And that's how many military bases we Americans have scattered throughout all the nations of the world. You talk about a world ruling empire. We're something bigger than the Russians, the Chinese, or the Romans, or the Babylonians, or the Egyptians, or anybody else, or probably all of them combined, ever dreamed of. Of course, we're all flat-ass broken. Our credit cards are maxed out, living in somebody else's house, driving somebody else's car, and some nitwit comes onto the Larry News Hour and says, it's every American's right to have health care insurance. That woman is so spaced out. She's so far out of touch with reality. She believes in fairy houses, for crying out loud. Fairy houses down in the woods. God, you talk about fairy tales. We Americans are so far divorced from reality, I doubt if we'll ever get back to sanity again. I don't know. Maybe. I have high hopes. How about inflation? Have you heard about inflation? Every time I look at the inflation numbers, there's an outfit called Shadow Stats. Can you spell Shadow Stats, boys and girls? Spelled shadowstats.com. It's one of these outfits on the internet that you can go to if you want some real numbers coming out. And they'll tell you where they get these real numbers. You know, your government publishes numbers. Well, there's others. Just the statistical operations operating out here, you know. This guy over here, his name is Bob Chapman, puts out the International Forecast, or the BLS. It's called the Bureau of Labor Statistics. He calls them the Bureau of Lying Statistics. And they tell us, for instance, here's some numbers from the BLS. Inflation's 4.7%. That was for March. And M3, they don't publish anymore. They don't want you to know what the hell it is. So that's zero. And then a real inflation over here, unemployment is 5%. Now, the way we count inflation over here in the United States, you know, from the Bureau of Labor Statistics, we have a market basket. And so they've got a bunch of stuff that they put into this market basket. And, you know, it could be spark plugs, you know, down here at the local O'Reilly store, or it could be a loaf of bread, you know, from Kroger's or whatever. And they put, you know, 25 or 30 things in this market basket, and then they just watch the prices of them, you know. And then they come back and they give you some numbers, but they don't put in gasoline and they don't put in food. They leave those out. Then they got one more real neat number over here. This is a good one. They come up, say, with a Dell computer, and they say, okay, Dell computers, you know, in 2005 were selling for $2,000. And they say the Dell computer in 2005 selling for $2,000, it had three memory chips in it. Okay, and so now the Dell computer in 2008, you know, it's got four computer chips in it, and it costs $100. And so they come along and they say, okay, well, now in the CPI, then the real CPI has actually gone down. And the way they compute that, say, well, the old computer had three chips in it, and this one's got four, so it's 25% better. But it's not 25% more money. You know, it's not $2,500. It's only $100 more. So The fact that they're charging $2,100 doesn't mean that the CPI went up by 5% because they're getting 5% more for it. What that means is that it went down by 20% because they put 25% more in it, but they only raised the price by 5%, so therefore the CPI went down by 20%. That's what Bob Chapman calls the Bureau of Lying Statistics. That's what we do here in the United States. Honest to God, I couldn't make this up. I'm not making this up for you people living in Europe, in Australia, in South Korea, Japan, around the world. Honest to God, I'm not making this up. That's what we do in this country. It comes right out of our government. The price of a Dell computer goes up from $2,000 to $2,100. And our Bureau of Labor Statistics comes out and they say, well, the real CPI then has actually gone down by 20%. Because they put 25% more chips into the computer. It's called hedonic adjustment. Then they got another model over here. It's called the birth-death model for keeping track of employment. The birth-death model. See, when we actually see the news or when we see an actual statistic, it'll say something like, well, the Bell telephone company is laying off 5,000 people, and General Motors is laying off 4,000 people, and they tell us about all these guys that are laying off all these people, say. And then the BLS comes back and says, well, the economy created last month 70,000 jobs. Well, that's not as good as the experts had predicted. They were predicting 110,000 jobs, but we only produced 70,000. See, that makes all of you people feel a lot better. We were thinking we were going to create 110,000 jobs, but we only created 70,000 jobs. Well, it's not perfect, but it's a lot better than nothing. Now, the truth of the matter is we lost jobs. The truth of the matter is we lost 80,000 jobs. But the president doesn't want to come out in his news conference and say, well, last month, let me report to you boys and girls that the economy lost 80,000 jobs or contracted by a certain percentage. No, that's negative. Hell, we don't want to do that. This is an election year. So we want to put the best foot forward. So we come to you and we lie to you, and we use what we call hedonic adjustment. And they say, well, here's how many people were born, and here's how many people died. And we presume that with this many people born, that in so many years, these people are going to go into the workforce. And that's because everybody has to work. And so since everybody has to work, we have this mathematical formula, and we come back and we say, well, because of the number of people that were born this month or this week or this day, therefore, here's how many people have been taken into the workforce. Huh? Huh? What the hell has that got to do with reality? Nothing. It's a fairy tale. Just a fairy tale. Just like the little girl going down into the woods to her fairy house. Just like Barney and Big Bird and Sesame Street and Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood, it's just a fairy tale, but it's an adult fairy tale. And hell, bankers and investment brokers and people on Wall Street, you know, they sit on the edge of their seats in their little cubicles and in their offices waiting for the government to put these numbers out so that they can buy or sell stocks or buy or sell bonds or do whatever the hell they're doing. I guess. I mean, that's what they tell me. And if those people are sitting there waiting for the Department of Labor to put out these numbers so that they can buy or sell stocks, they got their heads up their hind ends. That's what the bottom line is. Now, I suspect, you know, that you people in South Korea and Taiwan and Bangladesh and Brazil and Uruguay and you know, maybe in Russia and China, maybe you people have your head screwed on straight. But let me tell you, here in the United States, we're living in a dream world. We're so spaced out over here, we don't know whether we're coming or going. And now we're going to vote for somebody that's going to give us national health care insurance. We're flat-ass broke. You know, you Chinese over there, we cannot pay you that trillion. That's $1,000 billion. We owe you Chinese $1,000 billion. Did you know that? We can't pay that. We don't have it. We couldn't produce $1 trillion to pay you people with if our lives depended on it. Why? We've already exported all of our industrial capacity to China, for crying out loud. You're sitting over there with our steel mills that used to sit on the Monongahela River in Pittsburgh. It's in China. We don't have it. We can't produce steel. And then the Toyota company over there, they report that they're producing more cars than Ford. Yeah, they displaced Ford. You know, we used to have General Motors. That was number one. And then we had Ford was number two. Now it's Toyota number two. Hell, before long, the Japs will be producing more cars than the Americans here in America. And you expect us, hey, you Japanese people, you good folks over there in Japan, nice guys that you are. I think we owe you about $1,600 billion. Last time I saw some numbers, I think that was the number, $1.6 trillion. You're not going to get paid over there. We're not paying. Not because we don't have high hopes and a strong dollar, and not because we don't intend to, and we're looking for peace, and you know, so on. It's because we're flat-ass broke, and we don't have the money. And we're living in a fairyland. And we're just about to take on national health care insurance. George Bush, he's living in fairyland also. He gave our senior citizens here, I don't know what this thing is going to cost, but over a period of 10 years, it was $1 trillion or $2 trillion. I don't know. We're throwing trillions around over here now, you know, like it was chicken feed. Anyway, we're throwing trillions of dollars away. See, our senior citizens here in this country are taking an average of 6 drugs each. Everybody age 65 here in the United States is a drug addict. Well, I guess I shouldn't say everyone age 65 or more, but on average, if you're 65 years old, see, I'm 65 and I don't take any drugs, none, zero, zilch. So that means that somebody over there has to be taking 7, 8, or 9 drugs to make up for guys like me that aren't taking my fair share. So my president came along and he said, you know, George didn't write for you to have to go out and pay for your own drugs. Young people, they can earn the money. They can go down and buy their crack cocaine and their heroin, their marijuana. But you know, you're an old guy and you're on Social Security, you know, and you need a drug benefit. And so our Congress, our 545 fools in Washington, they gave us a drug benefit. Flat ass broke. We're bankrupt. We owe the Japs $1.6 trillion. We owe the Chinese $1 trillion. You know, another trillion or two around to the rest of you guys out there. We owe you people all this money. We can't pay what we owe, so we put together this Princess Cruise, this fairy tale, and we gave all the senior citizens this great drug benefit. We're going to spend $1 trillion on our senior citizens buying drugs to keep those people drugged out, spaced out, so that they can't wake up to reality and find out how we're screwing them, blueing them, and tattooing them on the CPI when we give them their annual 3.4% cost of living index increase next year when inflation's running 15%. That's why we gave you seniors your drug benefit, so that we can keep you spaced out on drugs so you can't wake up to reality and figure out what the hell's going on. So the seniors of America are living in fairyland, drugged out. Hey, I'm out of time. I'm going to give you a final reminder here that you've been listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Remember, The Law Hour is served 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 100 countries daily over the internet and radio worldwide. For more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, please go to our website at georgegordon.org. That's georgegordon.org. And the Law School is a private, nonprofit, non-sectarian law school that is open to individuals, but by prearrangement. The Law School conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. And the Law Hour website is updated weekly. It has our radio log schedule and archives, and that can be accessed through the website as well at georgegordon.org. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the internet by title and date for your listening convenience. And the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Time's up. We've got to leave it right there. We'll see you back here tomorrow night. Same time, same station. God willing, of course. Until then, thanks for listening, everybody, and good night, friends.